You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, folks. I have the pleasure of being joined by Ben Habib via Zoom when he's on holiday to discuss what's happening with Nigel Farage, Rupert Lowe, and the Reform Party, and the future of the right wing in Britain more broadly. Because actually, a lot is up in the air at the moment, and it's revealing a lot of cockroaches that are currently scurrying for cover. And actually, I would rather address them and deal with the issues so we can have something a little more wholesome moving forward. Because one of the things that we have recently seen revealed is that, well, the allegations against Rupert Lowe actually seem not to be against Rupert Lowe. And so Reform kicking him out and saying he'll never be welcome back because he was mildly and constructively critical of Reform and the position that they're in seems to be part of a pattern of behaviour, a long-standing pattern of behaviour that Nigel Farage has demonstrated, where he mercilessly crushes anyone who he feels may be a popular threat to him and his way of doing things, which I think is actually not a very wholesome and healthy way of approaching any kind of political activity. I would personally much rather a cooperative and collaborative way of doing politics. And I think that Ben probably agrees with me on that. How are you, Ben?
I'm very well, thank you, Carl, and good to see you. And I agree with you 100%.
I mean, it doesn't really seem to bear thinking about. It's why wouldn't we want a large collection of talented, confident, happy people dealing with one another openly and honestly, rather than, and you know what's weird? Like someone earlier today said that this seems to be like the plot of Dune playing out, as if Nigel Farage represents sort of House Harkonnen and the Atreides on the other side saying, well, can't we just be good? Can't we be decent? What's your impression of all of this been so far?
No, I haven't watched Dune, but Nigel, I mean, where do I start? So let me go right to the nub of the issue, I think. And it's this, Nigel is a narcissist. I don't like to make ad hominem attacks, but when a man controls the political party, when he makes himself the center of attention, doesn't allow anyone else to come forward, crushes anyone that actually could share the limelight with him, and in order to deliver the country to safety, you would need a team of Samsons, you know, and they would have to share the limelight with him. Indeed, he should be encouraging people who are better than him to join the party. That's what a proper leader would do. But he crushes anyone who comes close to rivaling him for media attention. And so when you've got a narcissist in total control of the nation's hopes, you're in for a bumpy ride. And that's why I was arguing so vehemently for democratization. It wasn't to set Nigel out of the party, but it was to make sure that there were checks and balances and processes within the party that would enable the great minds of our movement, and I count you as one of those, Carl, if I may say so, to actually be heard by the leadership and for your voice to be entertained, not dismissed. At the moment, because it's the Nigel Farage-controlled party, the only thing anyone can do, and Rupert tried it, is to plead with Nigel, say, please, Nigel, please do this. And if Nigel doesn't want to do it, and as was the case with Rupert, he didn't even meet Rupert. He didn't meet him for months. Rupert was pleading for a meeting, and Nigel wouldn't meet him. He didn't have to, because he controls the party. And inevitably, it was going to end up in a bust up. So when you've got a strong character like Nigel, a narcissist like Nigel, it's not beyond the realms of possibility that you can make that work for the country, but he needs to have checks and balances around him that keep him with it on the straight and narrow. And Nigel has completely shirked that. He says he's democratized the party. He hasn't. It's in his total control. And he is going about doing huge damage to the hopes and aspirations of the country. Because even if somehow, by the way, Carl, even if somehow he can keep his high polls rating and he can be part of a future government, he won't have the people around him that can articulate the policies, enact the policies, drive those policies through that are so required to save our country. And so the whole thing will be a pointless exercise. So Rupert was absolutely right to call Nigel out. And if you don't mind me saying so, so was I.
And, so was I.
So were you.
I did the same thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely right to call him out. And this is the time to call him out, because we have got just over four years before the general election. And I'm glad that it's happened sooner rather than later. I thought I was going to be a voice in the wilderness, but this has now become the center, mainstream debate. And so people like you and me and others need to really drive this debate to its natural conclusion and make sure that we emerge from it with some kind of coherent voice for the colloquial right wing. I don't think I'm right wing. I mean, I think I'm just pro-British. But, you know what I mean. Yeah.
There's no point quibbling over the labels at this point.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, just accept the label.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly on the money here. And I find myself drawing comparisons to different styles of politics. And I just find it bizarre that Nigel has chosen a very rigid and formalized and insecure form of politics. So there are ways of managing groups of people in democratic and also autocratic ways that are not nearly as fragile as the way Nigel Farage has pointed out. So one good example of this from history, I think, would be Louis XIV with the Palace of Versailles. What he would do is bring his aristocrats to Versailles and make them compete with one another for his attention. And this meant that his position was actually very secure. And so he wasn't in danger of them overthrowing him or anything like this. Whereas Nigel Farage appears to have taken a very much an ivory tower mentality, where Absolutely. He and a very few viziers around him are in complete control of everything. Like Zia Yusuf is at the moment acting like some sort of hatchet man, some grand vizier to Nigel Farage's sultanate. But the thing is, in this sort of Ottoman sense of the sultanate, that's actually a very fragile political machine, because if the vizier decides to bump off the sultan one day, the sultan has no allies to come and call upon. And so there's no one he can lean into. Whereas Louis XIV would have said, well, no, I've got a dozen other nobles that I can go to for support if three or four are planning to kill me. The sultan can do nothing like that, because everything is directly underneath him and geared in such a way that no one is allowed to disagree with him. No one is allowed to speak out against him. And so if you're surrounded by fawning yes men, well, you'll be surrounded by the fawning yes men until they drive the knife into your back and you'll never hear a contrary opinion.
Fawning yes men are basically fundamentally flawed human beings. They don't have courage. And so when they sense the changing wind, they'll be the first to drive the knife into you. And I think the analogy that you've given, the historical analogy, is absolutely spot on. And there's a human element to this as well, Carl, isn't there? That if you surround yourself with viziers who are at least having the opportunity to air their points of view, have the debate, therapeutically, they're going to feel that they've done their bit. And Rupert couldn't even get close to Nigel. He couldn't get in his ear. He kept saying, come and talk to me. Nigel wouldn't talk to him. And let me just say this, in my own personal experience, Nigel appointed himself leader on the 3rd of June, 2024. I was deputy leader. I was not forewarned about Nigel coming back as a leader. Forget about having any discussion with him. I wasn't even told that he was coming back as leader. I discovered in that afternoon at the press conference that he was now leader. And throughout the general election, I didn't once speak to Nigel. In fact, I haven't once spoken to Nigel since he came back as leader. We've had some texts, some of which have been frankly abusive from him. And there's been no correspondence. So I knew straight away when he came back that things were going to be problematic. Nigel and I, you know, this isn't about me, but I'm just going to say this if I may. Nigel and I are ideologically at odds. And we have been ideologically at odds for a long, long time. And if I had known that Nigel was coming back in to lead Reform, I would never have joined Reform. I had the firm impression that Nigel wanted to make money. In fact, he's not a firm impression. He told me that. I had dinner with him in 2020. Rupert Lowe, it's really amusing, actually. Now that what's happened to Rupert, it makes his dinner really interesting. So it was in August 2020 when lockdowns had been temporarily removed. Rupert Lowe, Robert Rowland, who's now sadly died, a very good man, would have been on our side in all of this, took Nigel out for dinner. And we said, look, Nigel, Brexit's not done. Boris Johnson has to negotiate the trade, what subsequently became the Trade and Cooperation Agreement. We need you back in the field. We need you fighting to get a proper Brexit. Because at the heart of breaking from the liberal global order, the first step of that was to break away from the EU properly. You know, anyone who cared about this country knew we had to leave the EU properly. And Nigel turned on me at supper, very expensive supper at the Arts Club in London. Cost me, I think, 700 quid or something for three of us. You know, cigars, top wine. I mean, I really entertained him. And I said, Nigel, what do you need to stay in politics? And he turned on me and he said, it's all right for you. You were born with a silver spoon up your ass. You know, I've had to make all my own way in life. And by the way, I wasn't born with a silver spoon up my ass. My father, more often than not, attended my backside with a wooden stick. You know, it wasn't a silver spoon. And anyway, that's by the by. But I got the firm impression, as I say, he declared it to me, he wanted to make money. He wanted, after 25 years of having what he called serve the people, he wanted to make money. I thought, great, right, off he goes. That's a perfectly legitimate decision for a man to make. Go and look after your own interest. But then he said things like Brexit done, and it wasn't. And then he said things like the United Ireland is inevitable. And then more recently, he's been saying things, you know, which I find an affront. I fought for Northern Ireland to come out of the EU. It's still left behind. And Nigel said, well, you know, who cares about Northern Ireland kind of thing? Well, if you know, this is the other thing. Sorry, I'm digressing. But if you don't know what it is that forms the democratic unit for which you are fighting, and in my view, that is the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, if you can't define that as the unit for which you're fighting, frankly, you haven't got a joined up political philosophy. And for Nigel to say I'm pro-Brexit without acknowledging the fact that Northern Ireland is part of the United Kingdom means he doesn't really know what it means to be pro-Brexit, because it means for the entire United Kingdom to come out. Yeah, I mean, I'm perfect.
Sorry, just in the interest of time.
I'm getting stuck in the week.
It's fine. Everyone does. The point being, there's no reason for Nigel to behave the way he does, right? As far as I can tell, he could instead be a bit more collegial and just have people give their input without feeling threatened by the very nature of the thing. But instead, as far as I can tell, and Rupert Lowe and yourself are just two examples on a long list of people that he has deliberately shut out. But then if he was just shutting you out, then okay, that's one thing. But then he goes on the attack and begins what I can only describe sort of mean girl politics, which is character destruction, reputation destruction. And okay, well, if it's someone like Douglas Carswell that people don't, I mean, like it's not okay, but like if he's not as well known on social media, perhaps, as someone like Rupert Lowe, okay, I can see how that works. Or if it's Stephen Wolfe or whoever, that okay, these are. Not unknown, but lesser known people. But Rupert Lowe...
And social media didn't exist then in the way that it exists now.
Precisely. Social media has created a large cohort of very switched on people. as well as well-meaning friends. You know, lots of people who are very friendly to one another because they see the virtues and the causes that they're fighting for. And so no doubt, had I been more aware of UKIP back in 2016, I would have had something to say about the way that Stephen Wolfe was treated. And so for him now, in the year of our Lord 2025, to do it to Rupert Lowe, who appears to be almost kind of comically good in a way, as in, like, I went through this on the podcast today. The BBC went to Great Yarmouth and interviewed people on the street. And the worst anyone could say about him was, well, he's not actually from here. Otherwise, he's brilliant. He's donating his money, his wages to charity. He is actually fixing local concerns. Quote, he is the best MP Great Yarmouth has ever had. And all of the other character witnesses who have come out and said, well, I've known Rupert Lowe for 45 years. He's a giant teddy bear. He's been nothing but kind and chivalrous to everyone around him. Do you think he may have picked the wrong fight here?
He's absolutely picked the wrong fight. Rupert Lowe is a first-class gentleman. And it's not that he's thought to destroy his reputation, which is the normal playbook. He's actually sought to destroy Rupert Lowe. You know, however frivolous the complaint to the police, the aim of a complaint to the police is to get someone incarcerated. That's what it is. It's a criminal complaint. But there's no way back from that criminal complaint. There was perhaps a very short opportunity during which Nigel could have sacked Bear Youssef and said, I do not endorse your criminal complaint. By all means, make it, but you do it on your own. But he didn't do it. He doubled down and he supported Zaire Youssef. And I think it makes, I'm moving on here, but I think it makes any form of reconciliation impossible. You can't seek to have someone incarcerated and then put your arm around their shoulder and say, well, come back into the fold.
Well, they've made that clear that they don't want him back, even if he's found innocent. So it shows that it wasn't really about the allegations at all.
Yeah, so-called allegations, because actually the allegations, there weren't any real allegations. You know, there's no allegation of bullying against Rupert. That's against other people. It just happened to happen in Rupert's office, nothing to do with Rupert. So that's the first one dispensed of. And then the second one is, you know, he threatened Zaire Youssef apparently with physical violence, verbally threatened him with physical violence. Well, isn't reform the singular entity that bangs on about people being, you know, slightly more stiff upper lip when it comes to being offended with words? And even if I said to you, you know, if I said to you, Carl, I wouldn't, because you, you know, you'd hit me harder than I could hit you. But if I said to you, I'm going to punch you between the eyes, I mean, that's a kind of, that's what, you know, that's anger. It's not, you know, I'm not going to punch Carl between the eyes. You know, the whole thing is absurd. And to make the complaint 3 months after it happened, you know.
But also, Zia Youssef is 38 and Rupert Lowe is 67. Kind of embarrassing, but for Zia Youssef, if he felt intimidated by it. No, I'm not saying that Rupert isn't in good shape or anything, but, you know, when you're sort of our age, Zia, and when you're being threatened by a man of his age, if that is what happened, it's a bit embarrassing for you to take that seriously, frankly.
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, the application, the complaint, rather, filed with the police happened the day after the whole thing blew up, as did these bullying things. You know, there's no cause and effect between the threats of physical violence and a complaint to the police. The cause and effect is between Rupert outshining Nigel, Nigel wishing to set Rupert aside, Rupert speaking up, and then being absolutely nailed. And by the way, I've seen that playbook used dozens and dozens of times by Zaire Youssef and Nigel across the country to set aside good former grassroots members of Reform who've stood shoulder to shoulder with me in various elections and others, campaigning for Reform, putting Reform on the map, and they have been summarily dismissed with their reputations tarnished. Many, many people, I won't start naming names because otherwise I would have to, you know, I might forget someone.
But you'd be here all there day are, as well.
Yeah, I'd be here all day. It's absolutely abominable. And I could see what was happening, Carl, with Rupert. So I wrote to Rupert, and I'm so glad I did. I sent him a text. I can send you a copy of it after this interview if you're interested. I sent Rupert a text on the morning of the 28th of February before any complaint was made by Reform against Rupert. And I said, Rupert, the drumbeat of division between you and Nigel is getting very loud. In my experience, what's going to happen next is they will sack you and they will rubbish you. Please resign before they do it. Otherwise, their lives will they will seek their lies to trump your truth. But if you resign, you can get your story out there. You can own the truth before they can seek to rubbish you. And I was so glad I sent that text. I mean, Rupert, I think, was aware to the risk.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm so glad I sent that text because that's exactly what happened. They just went after Rupert's jugular. And it's a despicable way to treat a colleague to, or 20% of your parliamentary party, no less. You know, absolutely despicable. And that for me, puts reform into an unreformable category. Nigel has to go.
Well, this is
Yusuf has to go.
This is the issue, isn't it? It's not just a despicable way to treat a colleague. It's a despicable way to treat anyone. I mean,
anyone,
you know, I've got no love for Labour MPs, but I certainly wouldn't do something like this to one of them. I would hopefully defeat them on the merits of the argument, right?
Yeah.
And so the fact that this is the right-wing party in Britain, and like I said at the beginning, it's kind of like it's controlled by House Harkonnen, with lots of evil scheming and backstabbing and who knows what's going on. It's very disgusting, frankly. And
it's disgusting.
It's frankly disgusting. But I'm very glad that Rupert Lowe has shown a great deal of fortitude in the face of this. And he's just said, well, look, I don't take anything back. I'm not apologizing for anything. I'm going to take legal action, whatever he's going to do. I hope it's successful. But I think a lot of people will be asking, okay, so what now then? If in fact reform are, as you say, unreformable, which honestly is probably true, and they will take advantage of the goodwill of tens of thousands of good people. And I met these people during the UKIP days and now, because of course lots of them are subscribers of ours and fans of ours. So I meet them all the time, and I see them all the time doing as much hard work as anyone could ever ask for them. And it's very clear that anyone around Nigel Farage and in his party is essentially a marked man who could get thrown under the bus the second Farage's Eye of Sauron falls on them and he recognizes them as an entity. They could go straight under the bus, just like two of my men have been thrown under the bus, Dan Tubbs and Beau Dade. They were to stand as reform candidates out of the kindness of their heart, really, and they got deselected on trivialities. And so people are going to ask, okay, well, what can we do then? So what do you think we should be thinking about doing from here on?
So Rupert, like me and like you and so many others, is on the political battlefield, not because he wants to advance his political career or make money. As you said, he donates his salary to charities because he fears for the future of the country. So Rupert ain't going anywhere. Mm-hmm. And even though I was shoved pretty ignominiously aside, I ain't going anywhere. And we've got to deal with the present problem, which is a full-on attack on Rupert's reputation and an attempt to incarcerate him. We have to deal with that. And I'm talking to Rupert frequently and regularly, and we will deal with that. And then once we've dealt with it, we need to gather ourselves and we need to make sure that we create a force somehow which is capable of saving the United Kingdom. And that's what we've got to do. And even if that ends up destroying reform, so be it.
Well, if this is the fight that we've been forced to have, then this is the fight we've been forced to have. Because I will have lots of people after this asking me, well, are you going to start a political party then? Is Ben Habib and Rupert Lowe going to start a political party? Because it's become wildly apparent that the ivory tower view of politics that Nigel Farage has taken has been a marked, and honestly, I don't think great success in contrast to, say, Donald Trump's big tent politics, in which he has just said everyone can come and join the MAGA movement. And so I think people are asking for some kind of big tent right-wing politics where we can just literally take everyone. Because there are dozens of totally wasted commentators, political pundits, thinkers, academics, people with, you know, civil servants, ex-politicians, current politicians, who are currently homeless and don't want to put their lives in Nigel Farage's hands.
Absolutely right. I mean, if you look at Nigel's history, every single entity with which he's been involved has ended in absolute blooming turmoil. Mm-hmm. And fundamentally, Mr. Brexit didn't get Brexit, even though he says he did. And I'm, without wishing to get caught in the weeds again, you know, for me, that's a fundamental issue because Brexit was the first step to freeing us from the liberal global order and restoring the United Kingdom. If Mr. Brexit doesn't get that, you know, he ain't worthy of holding that title. He's got to go. So I'm afraid I am irreconcilably at odds with Nigel Farage as his Rupert Lowe. And as I'm sure you, I don't want to speak for you, Carl, but you know, many are. And so we've got to do something, a new party or something. Mm. We are going to do something. We're going to do something.
I think that's a superb idea because honestly, just the constant refrain is, well, Nigel Farage is the only game in town. It's like, okay, well,
bollocks.
In a way they're correct, right? He is at the moment because we let him be the only game in town because we don't want to split the vote. We don't want to do this. Well, he's already splitting the Conservative vote and he already delivered us Keir Starmer. So, we may as well contest for it, I would say. There's no point letting him just run roughshod like this.
I think politically what he's got really wrong, what he's really misunderstood, everyone says he's a great political tactician. What he's totally misunderstood is that the 2024 election actually was a thumping majority for the right wing.
Yes.
I know we got a thumping majority Labour MPs, but actually if you took the 4.5 million people who didn't vote and you add them to the votes that the Conservatives and Reform got, it was a thumping right-wing victory. Mm. And the next election is not going to be won in the centre ground, which is where Nigel is hurriedly going. The next election is going to be won by a party that is unashamedly pro-British and has policies that are actually dramatic in the impact that they will have in restoring the country. Anything less isn't going to work. We're not in a tinkering moment. We're watching the existential threat to the United Kingdom actually being delivered. We've got to stop it. And Nigel ain't the man because he's tacking right to the middle. I mean, one of the differences between him and Rupert is over the mass deportation of illegal migrants. What can be wrong with that as a policy? Nigel doesn't want to do it.
This is crazy, actually, because even leaning left outlets like YouGov, when they poll, find that 2/3 of the public want deportations of illegal immigrants. This is completely uncontroversial. And even half of Liberal Democrat voters want illegal immigrants deported. Like, this is the most centre-ground political position in the entire country, with by far the most public support. And so for Nigel Farage to row back and say, I never said I was anti-migration, I don't want mass deportations, I don't want these things. It's like, okay, but this is a very peculiar retreat from the most obviously correct political win and easiest political win. Why is he backing down from this?
I don't know. He's I mean, it's just. I mean, the only word is stupid.
It's in the manifesto.
Well, it's just blooming stupid, Carl, isn't it? It's just stupid. He's lost the plot. I don't know what he's on. You know.
Yeah. No.
Whatever it is, I don't want to be on it.
Yeah. No. I'm in complete diametric opposition to it. Okay. Yeah. So, with the events with Rupert Lowe, do you see any potential future in which the Nigel Farage and the sort of cabal of people controlling the Reform Party, not that I think they can be removed from the party or anything like that, but may perhaps change their minds on any of this in any way?
And Nigel has to go. You can't support Zia Yusuf, who's reported Rupert to the police wrongly. Reported Rupert to the police, and then continue to hold your position. It's a resignation matter. Mm. If Reform wants reform, Nigel has to go. And that's an impossible. I mean, you and I know that ain't going to happen.
No. So what do you make of the allegation that Nigel is the Reform Party? And without him, there is no Reform Party. There's no polling for Reform. They'll never get anywhere. They'll never have any impact on the national polls. And if it wasn't for Nigel Farage, no one would have a seat. And the entire party would essentially be liquidated.
So to the latter point, I would say bollocks, because as we all know, Nigel Farage wasn't even on the political battlefield when Reform was being established. It was established with him absent. On the eve of the general election, we were polling at 16%. We actually got 14% in the general election of the vote. That was bang in line with our polling. So we were going to get MPs. I knew we were going to get MPs. Some seats were obviously better than others. It had nothing to do with Nigel Farage coming back. In fact, Nigel, Carl, in my view, was damaging to our electoral prospects during the general election because he sucked up so much capital, so much resource into Clacton. You know, the whole Reform machinery went round Clacton. I had zero support in Wellingborough. I paid for my entire election campaign myself. And I had zero support. And I implored Nigel to come and help me, and he didn't. He didn't even, well, as you know, I haven't spoken to him since he appointed himself leader. No, Nigel was damaging to our election, general election. So the idea, and we got there without Nigel. And we were going to, even if Nigel hadn't come back, we were going to go higher in the polls after winning five seats. Under Richard Tice, we would have gone higher in the polls because people would have looked at reform and said, wow, oh my God, they are not just a protest vote. They've actually got seats. And that's seismic. We broke into the first past the post system. We got five seats and we came second in 98 seats. Under the first past the post, with the right policies and the right people, we could win a general election. It's not nonsense. We could do it. But you've got to have the right people. And you can't get the right people if you have a despot, a narcissistic, prickly, adolescent despot in charge of reform. And that's what Nigel is. Nigel is a problem for reform. He's not the answer.
Yeah, now I actually firmly find myself falling into this camp because, like you said, not only were, I mean, at one point when Nigel Farage wasn't leading it, it peaked at 21% of a poll. And so you can see there was an organic desire for reform anyway. But also, Nigel Farage seems to essentially be claiming the victory in Clacton, but that was ground laid for him by Douglas Carswell back in 2015, I think it was, when he won the by-election there. And this Nigel Farage only came back to reform because the polling out of Clacton put a reform victory in there. And so he unceremoniously threw under the bus whoever was the person
Tony
who
was Mac.
The person who's supposed to be the candidate in reform in Clacton, threw them under the bus and then made it all about himself. But that was a seat that you were on track to win anyway without Nigel Farage.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Without Nigel Farage. And
he hadn't won previously either. It was Carswell who'd won. Yeah. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah. No, but you're right. And Nigel had stood seven times for Parliament and didn't make it. So where's all that charisma and, you know, without Nigel, you can't do it. Well, with Nigel, they didn't do it. And actually, without Nigel, we put reform on the map. Now, I think a lot of the reason why reform got on the map was because the British people are crying out for the United Kingdom to be rescued. It doesn't matter who fills that political vacuum. If someone fills it, the British people will vote for it, as long as they're aware that that option exists. And that's the challenge for any new entrant, is making the British people aware that you exist. And, but, you know, if Rupert were to do something, I think it's a bit early because we've got to, you know, fight this battle that Nigel has declared, this war that Nigel has declared on Rupert. But if Rupert were to do something, he's an MP. Yep. He has a voice. He will be leading from the front. Yep. This is not an insurgency. This will be something quite different. And he will have great minds and great thinkers. And I think a large swathe of the British population because of social media coming round him very quickly, including hundreds of grassroots former reformers who have been thrown out unceremoniously from the party, who would rally around Rupert and me straight away. I know the grassroots. Unlike Nigel, I actually went round the country meeting these people for a year and a half, speaking at all their rallies, geeing them up, giving them hope. And, you know, in many ways, I feel like a charlatan having done it to see, you know, what Nigel delivered for them in the end, which was setting them aside. But they will come round to us and they will trust us and they will know that we will fight for them. And as you say, it has to be a broad tent. You've got to take everyone in from the movement. You can't say, well, he's not welcome. He's not welcome. He said something, you know, nasty once. Everyone, for God's sake, someone said something nasty once. That doesn't exclude them from, you know, public activity. It's just an absurd concept. And on that note, I've been dying to say this on media, but I haven't had the opportunity. Nigel's right-hand man, who has no democratic position, isn't an executive of reform, has nothing to do ostensibly with the party Reform UK. There's a guy called George Cottrell, who's a convicted flipping felon. But that doesn't stop Nigel from having him as his right. He's never more than 5 yards from Nigel. So all this high horse stuff about, oh, you know, we've got to vet people, we've got to take the high road, you know, we're going to throw Rupert under a bus, that's all bollocks again.
No, I think so. And what also very much frustrates me is, that, again, there are two strategies to this, and Nigel seems to have picked the wrong one on each count. So you've got the sanitized strategy, in which you must have only people who are 100% approved of by the mainstream media. So people who essentially have never used social media or have never made a joke or have never said anything interesting in their entire political career and in their public presence. Or you can take the Donald Trump, Steve Bannon approach, which is flood the zone. Just have everyone all the time, everywhere. So there's just no point in the media making a big deal about one person saying one thing somewhere else. Like, this is what we are and this is what we're going to do. And that's worked very, very well for Donald Trump. And currently Nigel Farage is engaged in a civil war with 1/5 of his own party. So
yes. I agree with you. We've got to take a Trumpian approach to this. I mean, you know, what's really interesting, ironically, is that Trump sees Nigel for what he is. It's not just Elon Musk. Trump sees Nigel for what he is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Nigel's blown it across the Atlantic, and Rupert hasn't. Rupert hasn't done it.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing, because he didn't get an invite, a formal invite to Trump's inauguration, did he?
No, he didn't. He didn't. He was on the periphery. He didn't even listen to Trump's speech, if you believe what... Katie Hopkins. Katie Hopkins said she bumped into Nigel Farage lighting a fag outside his hotel when Trump was speaking. So he wasn't even listening to Trump's inaugural speech, which is really remarkable, isn't it?
But this does indicate that there is a distinct fraying there. And like you say, it seems that the Americans are spotting him for what he is. He's not Mr. Brexit, as Trump thought he was going to be. And so we're left, again, without a champion, without a purpose, without a place to rally around. And I think people are desperately looking for it.
Yeah, and Elon Musk saw it straight away, didn't he? He saw it straight away. And, you know, people say, oh, Elon Musk, he's a controversial character. My God, his brain is sharp. You know, he's 4,000 miles away or whatever it is, and he could see that Nigel ain't the man.
Yeah.
And Elon's right.
And it was clear from the moment that he decided, oh, reform needs new leadership and it should be Rupert Lowe. Well, that's Rupert Lowe. There's a clock on you now, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unfortunately, there's no way Nigel is going to not look at that with jealous eyes and make plans on how to get rid of you. Right, so before we end then, is there anything that I should have brought up but I didn't, that you think?
No, I think that was the best broad-ranging discussion I've had on the subject, if I may say so, since it all kicked off. You know, the other channels, you tend to get like 3 minutes or whatever it is to talk about something really incredibly important. But I think that, as you say, just leaving this with hope, this is the right bust up to have, because there's no point delivering Nigel into office and then finding he lets us all down. The UK needs dramatic change. Let's have the bust up now, and let's use this opportunity of a bust up by some miracle, either to reform, or more likely, create a new force of some description, which is going to save the United Kingdom.
Wonderful. Ben, thank you so much for joining me, and we'll see you all next time, folks.
Thank you.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.